And a very good morning to you. It's John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group, back with you for another program of The Law and You. This is your opportunity to get free legal advice between now and 9:30. All we'd like you to do is get on that telephone as soon as you possibly can. The number, of course, 55208888. That number again, 55208888. And don't forget, we do have an email address if for some reason you're not able to get to the telephone to call in. And our email address is talkback@4crb.com. That's talkback@4crb.com. But in the meantime, that number 55208888, and of course, if you're south of the Tweed River, don't forget that you need to throw 07 in front of that number. And thank you to all the people who called in last week to make for such an interesting program. We actually had 8 calls come in after those problems we had with the telephone system, and today is looking like it's going to be no exception as we say a very good morning to our first caller, Peter. G'day, Peter. How are you today?
I'm well, thanks, John. Yourself?
Well, indeed. How can I help you today?
I phoned a couple of weeks ago, and the person who owned a unit that I've rented for 3 years and lived in for another 12.
Right.
And when I pass on, I'm not sure whether you said it goes to my wife tax-free, the unit's in my name.
Right.
Or whether the cost base goes to her.
Right. Well, firstly, So this is where you're living as your principal place of residence?
It is.
Okay. So, and is it your intention to leave it to your wife under your will?
It is.
Okay. So you have two options with the property. If you leave it to your wife under your will, then the property will need to be transmitted to her after your passing by way of an application which is called a transmission by death. And depending on whether you need probate of your will or not, if the property's in Queensland, I assume?
It is.
Yep. Okay. So in Queensland, a property can still be transmitted to your spouse or to the beneficiary named without the need for probate. But what it requires is for the original will to be produced to the titles office when the application is lodged. Now, so your wife will inherit that property from you. There will not be any obligation to pay any tax in relation to it because the property has been left to her under your will. But she will also inherit your cost base in relation to that property. So there are a couple of ways of looking at it. You can look at the gain in the property between the date that you bought it, so you know that because you know the purchase price, and the value now divided by the number of years. And you said that you'd rented it out for a couple of years?
Yeah, 3 years.
Yeah, okay. So it may be, say, for example, 3/20ths is of the increase is gain, or alternatively, the property could be valued with a retrospective valuation as at the date that you moved into it. And if there was, for example, no real increase in the value between the date you bought it and the date that you moved in as your principal place of residence, then there may be no capital gains tax at all. And I think from memory... Sorry,
Peter.
It will
be after 20 years.
Oh, yes. No. But the time that you're living in it as your principal place of residence... there's no gain. If she then lives in it as her principal place of residence and then it's ultimately sold after her passing and it's sold within 2 years of her and sold and settled within 2 years of her date of death, then the only gain that may be brought to account is that first 3 years. So if, for example, on valuation, it was shown that you paid, for example, $200,000 for it and in 3 years' time it was worth $210,000 and now it's worth $600,000, well, it's only that $10,000 that's brought to account while you were living in it. You were renting it, not while you were living in it. And so you then get the 50% tax concession for CGT, which brings the gain back to $5,000. So, you know, you might be talking rats and mice.
Yeah, right. Now, what if like put it in her in both our names now.
Yeah, well, that was what I think from memory I suggested to you,
you could do. Yeah,
you could. You can do a very simple transfer now because as your spouse, the transfer to her, there's no stamp duty payable. And because it's presently your principal place of residence, there wouldn't be any capital gains tax. So you could transfer it into her name, and then on your death, the property would automatically go to her. Yes. So as the surviving joint tenant in relation to the property.
Okay, John. Thank you very much.
Okay then, Peter. All the very best. Time on 4CRB just marches along and we've just passed 10 minutes past 9. The Law and You is the program. The telephone number 5520888. If you have a question or a query, get on that phone right now, 5520888. As we say, a very good morning to George. G'day, George. How are you?
Oh, hello, John. John, I've got a question about contesting of will.
Yes.
I have two daughters, both biologically mine, but the oldest one was adopted to an adopted family and raised, and I've had very little, extremely little contact with her. And I was just wondering if I left my estate to my youngest daughter, which I have constant, would the other one, I haven't seen the other girl in 20, 30 years or something and had no contact in that time. And are they able to contest it?
So she was legally adopted, was she, by another family?
Yes. I'm her biological father,
but no, you're no longer her legal father. From memory, George, and I'll just need to double check on this, but I'm fairly sure that she actually doesn't have a claim on your estate because she's no longer regarded as your child. She's now regarded as a child of the adopted family, and so she wouldn't come within the class that could make a claim. But in any case, even if that were not the case, if you've had nothing to do with her for many, many years and she's never been financially dependent on you, then there would be very little likelihood that she would be successful in a claim, even if she was able to make one.
Yeah, she probably would, like if I did, when I do pass on, chances are she wouldn't even know.
No, well, that's the other side of it, and particularly in these COVID times, I've noticed that the incidence of funeral notices being advertised in the paper now has just dropped dramatically. There are these days there seem to be very few funeral notices published by comparison to what it was like before COVID. So it's just an interesting phenomenon because there is a thing called the Ryerson Index, which is a way that you can look up when people have passed away. They keep a record of all the funeral notices that are published, and their records go back a long, long way. So that if you're, it's one of the things we use if we're trying to ascertain whether someone who's a beneficiary under a will has passed away or not. In the past, we've used the Ryerson Index as just one of the tools to try and locate a person when we're trying to work that out. But as I say, the difficulty now is that, and the reason why we use the Ryerson Index as a first point of contact or a research is because it's free. It's on the internet and it's a free service, rather than doing searches with the with births, deaths and marriages in the various states, because of course in doing that you've got to pay a search fee. I'll take a further look at that, George, just to refresh my own memory in relation to it, but I'm pretty sure that because she's been adopted out, then she would not come within the class that could make a claim.
All right, then. Okay, John, after such a long time like that, if she did, she would have to prove that she was my biological daughter after so many years. Would that be possible?
Well, look, there probably are still records that would prove that, but that presupposes that she would even bring a claim, or whether she's entitled to bring a claim. So I think the first step is to see whether she is entitled to bring a claim. But as I say, I'm I'm fairly sure that once a child is adopted, that that ends their entitlement to make a claim.
Thanks for your help.
Okay, George, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB just continues marching along. It's presently, where are we, 15 minutes past nine, as we say a very good morning to Robert. G'day, Robert, how are you today? Robert, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, Robert, how are you?
Oh, good morning, John, I'm fine. Just another real estate question, if I might.
Sure.
We own a house, but my wife and I are thinking of buying a unit down at the beach for weekends.
Mm-hmm.
Can you own two residences, or does the second one become an investment property?
Well, the law in relation to, for example, principal place of residence and the exemption from capital gains tax applies to the property that you declare as your principal place of residence. And so the way that that's determined is, for example, where you're on the electoral roll, where you spend, obviously, the major amount of your time, where you might have your address for your driver's license, etc. It does become a little bit murky for people who have a second home, because you can, in fact, have a second property that you may declare as your principal place of residence, even though you're not living there. But it's only for a limited period of time. So I would really recommend that if you're wanting to make some definitive inquiries in relation to this, it would be best to speak to your accountant to get the to get all the facts and information on it. If, for example, you were living in your present home, which is your principal place of residence, you've bought a beach house, but you ultimately decide to move to the beach house as your principal place of residence, then obviously, depending on whether you sell your original property or not, if you sell that while it's still your principal place of residence, there would obviously be no capital gains tax on that. But if you then moved into the beach house as your principal place of residence, as I was saying to Peter earlier, you may look at the value of the property when you bought it, the value of the property at the time that you decide to move there as your principal place of residence. And from there, you would work out any gain. Because, I mean, just take as an example, if you bought a house on the beachfront at Miami back in the 70s, you might have paid $40,000 for it. You know, if in 10 years' time it was worth $90,000 and you moved into it as your principal place of residence at that point, well, obviously the increase from 40 to 90 when you ultimately sell is going to be taxable. But if then from the mid-80s up now till 2010 the property's gone up to $3 million, for example, well, the increase between the 90 and the $3 million would be tax-free because you're living in it as your principal place of residence.
Yes, well, we're in our principal place of residence, contemplating buying a unit.
Mm.
Do you think we would have to pay a higher stamp duty on the unit when we bought it? Or can we just call it our other principal residence?
Well, no, you've got to declare that it is your principal place of residence, and you can't have two principal places of residence. I suppose, look, it may be possible if the property was bought in one name that you or your wife could declare it as your principal place of residence, but you'd actually have to be living there. You've got to declare that you're going to move into the property within, I think from memory, it's either 6 or 12 months of date of purchase, and that you're going to live there continuously as your principal place of residence. Now, the stamps office do check on people who declare places as their principal place of residence. So I would never, ever advise a client to declare a property as their principal place of residence unless it's intended to do so. The other thing too that you need to consider in relation to this, Robert, is that from memory, the principal place of residence concession in relation to stamp duty cuts out these days at what's a comparatively low figure. I don't do any conveyancing anymore. I property was my principal area of practice for many, many years, but I haven't really done any work in that field for probably 15 or more years. But I do know that the principal place of residence concession cuts out at a fairly low figure. I've just got something in my mind of around 450 grand. So you'd be buying a pretty cheap beachside apartment if you were lucky enough to find one that was less than that price, particularly if it was beachfront. So you may not get the principal place of residence concession in any case.
Yes, okay. Oh, that's all very helpful. Thank you,
John. Okay, Robert, all the very best. And the time on 4CRB just continues rolling along. It's 20 minutes past nine. We've got no callers on the board at the moment, so if you have a question or a query, you can get in that last 10 minutes of the program. 5520888 is the number, and you could be our very next caller. We'll be back after this word from our sponsor.
Now is the time to discover or rediscover more of Southeast Queensland, and Palmer's coaches have the perfect day tour just for you. Jump on board for the Carnival of Flowers tour to Toowoomba. They make it easy on a fully guided tour with ample time to see and explore the gardens and tantalise your taste buds. Tours operate in September and include morning tea and lunch with four pickup locations across the Gold Coast. Call our sponsor now on 5522 0028.
And this is The Law and You on 4CRB. Our telephone number is 5520888. That number again, 5520888. After an absolute flurry of calls last week, we presently have no callers online. So if you have a question or a query that you'd like to answer this morning, get on that telephone straight away, 5520888. And while we're waiting for some calls to come in, one thing that I was wanting to make mention of this week was the importance of updating your will. And the reason, what really brought this home to me was recently I had the family of a gentleman who'd passed away come in to see me, and he'd made a will back in the late 80s. And under that will had left a life interest in his home to his wife, with no provision for her to go into a nursing home or anything of that nature, and essentially left the bulk of the estate to the children. Now, that that will, of course, was made all those years ago. We're talking, close to 30 years ago, 30 or more years ago. But the situation in the family had changed dramatically in that time, and the children were all adamant that they wanted the estate to go to the surviving their surviving mother, and of course the parents had been talking about updating their wills but had not actually got around to doing anything about it. And the unfortunate thing about that is that it therefore means that they've been left with this very, very ancient will, and now it's going, fortunately the children are all very much on side with their mother and it's going to be possible to sort it out, but it is going to be quite a costly exercise, because it's basically going to mean that after probate of the will is granted, there's going to have to be an application to the court for the mother or the surviving spouse to make an application for provision out of the estate, and basically to vary the terms of the will so that she gets the whole estate. And as you can imagine, there's going to be a bit of cost involved in doing that, whereas if they'd simply gone into their solicitor and got the will sorted out after such a length of time, it wouldn't have been half the problem. But enough of that. We've got some calls there as we say good morning to Sophia. Good morning, Sophia. How are you today?
Oh, yeah.
How are you, Sophia?
Sorry. I'm good.
How can I help?
John, I just want to ask, when I die, this whatever I like left to my beneficiary, which is my super pension account, is it a taxable?
If the beneficiaries that are going to receive it do not come within the class of beneficiaries that qualify under both the SIS legislation, which is the superannuation legislation, or are classified as eligible beneficiaries under the tax law, then yes, there very well may be tax payable on it. The exceptions to that are your surviving spouse. So if, for example, the super went to your surviving spouse or went to children who are dependent on you, so minor children, or alternatively a child who, for example, might be studying but is still financially dependent on you. But if you're simply, if it's simply going to your adult children who are not dependent on you, then yes, unfortunately, there will be tax. It does, though, depend in your super account how much of it is within the taxable component and how much is within the non-taxable component. So, Sophia, I might suggest that you give Finance Forum a call on Thursday morning because they would probably be better able to enlighten you in that area. All right, then.
Oh, when is it? Thursday morning,
same time, 9 o'clock. Same time, same phone number, 9 o'clock, Finance Forum. All right, then. And time just marches along. We've got Erica there. Good morning, Erica. How are you? Or are we on Erica? Hello, Erica. How are you?
Hello. I have a friend who has a partner who's now really dying with heart failure, mm-hmm. but he refuses to go to hospital.
Right.
And so she's just staying with him and nursing him. And it occurred to her, what if she's going to be held responsible for his death, say, if he dies, and of course there's no medical person present.
Mm-hmm. Well, what happens in those circumstances is that if someone dies at home, there's normally a need for a coroner or either an autopsy or a coroner's report in relation to the death. Presumably, though, he's got a treating doctor who's coming to see him at home.
Well, yeah.
So the doctor would be well aware of the circumstances. The doctor would be well aware that he's refusing to go to hospital. If, for example, he dies of a heart attack or something of that nature, that's fairly easily proved in an examination after he passes away. Or it may be that the treating doctor is prepared to sign off on the cause of death without the need for an autopsy. So what I would suggest your friend does is perhaps take the doctor aside the next time he comes to the home, and express her concerns and just have a little bit of a chat with the doctor about what she should do to make sure that she protects herself and just to not so much protects herself, but just assures herself that she's not going to have any bother in the event of him passing away.
Thank you.
Okay, then, all the very best. And with the time at 27 minutes past 9, we'll say hi to Ellie. G'day, Ellie. How are you today?
I'm well, thank you.
That's good. How can we help you today?
Yes, good morning, John. I finally talked my 40-year-old son into making a will.
Good on you.
just have a few issues he'd like to sort of sort out before he goes to see the solicitor. He has two children. He has a 16-year-old from a divorce. He doesn't see her, but he still supports her, thankfully, through child support. He has sole custody of a 9-year-old child.
Yes.
who has no contact whatsoever with the biological mother of that child.
Mm-hmm.
If my son was to die while the children were still quite young, we're quite concerned about the custody of the 9-year-old.
Mm.
We're wondering what sort of right the biological mother would have to take that to get that child, and is there any way he can protect that his 9-year-old from that situation, because it's really, really nasty. She lives in a very toxic environment, and
Yes, no, well, look, it is, I can understand his concern, Ellie, because depending on what orders are in place, are there any parenting orders in place?
They expired some time ago.
Right.
And a couple of times she has made contact when she's been in a inebriated or a whatever state. And she's been able to get legal aid just to get contact. The contact has been via phone. Mm-hmm. She made one phone call and hasn't heard from her since.
Mm.
So there's virtually been no contact for at least the last 2 years.
Mm.
And he has had, originally he had sole custody, but that's expired.
Yes.
And they've done nothing since.
Mm. Well, look, it is quite a difficult situation because certainly on the death of a biological parent, it is normally the surviving biological parent who has the strongest claim to custody of the child. And obviously in the situation that your son is in, that's the last thing that he would want. I mean, you can express in your will an expression of desire that, for example, who you want to take over parenting of a child, but it doesn't have any legal standing. So ultimately, it would be a matter for the court to determine who's going to have custody of the child in the event that he were to die. Has he got in mind who he would want to take over that parenting role?
Absolutely, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes, his sister, and he has very, very close to his sister and her husband and their three children. They're right. Very, very supportive.
Mm. Yes, all right. Well, look, whereabouts, does he live on the Gold Coast, Ellie?
No, he lives in Brisbane.
Lives in Brisbane, all right. Well, look, what I would suggest that he does is... I would suggest that he contact the Caxton Street Legal Centre in Brisbane, which provides free legal advice. And if it's possible, I would suggest that he go in and see them, because I think he really needs to speak to someone who is an expert in the area of family law, just to see what can be done. I mean, his sister would be able to make a claim for custody of the child in the event of his death, but depending on what action the biological mother took is going to ultimately determine the outcome. Now, the more you can build a case that can clearly show that that would not be the most desirable environment for the child to live in, then the more likelihood there is that the court will not make an order that's going to give custody to that person. And so it may be, for example, that the court would make an order that the sister have custody, and the wishes of the child would also be taken into account, although to what extent depends on their age at the time that the application is made. So I would suggest that he... Unfortunately, I can't give you a number for the Caxton Street Legal Centre, but it's C-A-X-T-O-N, it's as in Caxton Street in Brisbane. But if he was to ring them and hopefully be able to make an appointment to go in and see them, they would at least be able to give him some free advice about what would be the best strategy for him to adopt now, just to build a situation that in the event of anything happening to him, he's going to be able to be reasonably assured that his daughter is going to end up where he would like her to be in the unlikely event that he passes away. All right then.
Thank you very much for your advice. Much appreciated.
Okay, Ellie, all the very best. And
thank
the time
you.
On 4CRB, 33 minutes past nine. We're a little bit over time, but nonetheless, it's been a great program. I'm John Fradgley from the Bell Legal Group. It's been great to be with you this morning. I'll look forward to being back with you again next week. But until then, it's goodbye and God bless.